Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Monday edition. Shotgun start. It is March 25th. Joel, how we doing?
Hey, buddy. I'm doing well. Before we hopped on, I was trying to practice Andy's Brennan squeal, and I threw my voice out, or I hit puberty, one of the two. So I apologize for all the listeners for not injecting that type of fervor off the bat.
Squeal. I've never heard it called a squeal, but I think that's a pretty good term for it. And I don't know why or when we started. I mean, like with everything with this podcast, we had no real plan or not a lot of foresight into what it would be or what we should do. And we just hit record, and that's how we started it the first time. And we were now we're sort of handcuffed to it. And we get these substitutes like you today. And do they think they have to rise to that level? No, absolutely not. I noticed Bacon last week didn't do it. Like, there's no reason to even try doing it. I should note that is Joel Beal, Golf Digest senior writer, among, to my mind, the best writers and reporters, golf-wise or otherwise, maybe. Maybe we'll throw you on there with political writers and whatever else. Out there right now for Golf Digest senior writer. Andy is on vacation this week. We're going to have a couple Ireland cleanup items, but he usually does this vacation week before the Masters. Masters is a little late. It's a family vacation thing that he's kind of slotted in every year now about this time. So he'll be out. We'll have kind of maybe a rotating cast, but I went to one of the best first here with Joel, and to put a little pep in our Monday morning commutes, we have Peppy Peter Malnati taking down the Valspar Championship, his first victory since the 2015 Sanderson.
Anderson.
Yep. He won Reveille, the proud cock trophy there down in Jackson, Mississippi. Now he has the sort of animated brushstroke trophy at the Valspar. An amazing turn of events here. Some would say, you know, people are accusing the NFL of being a simulation, right? That this is it's all scripted, right? It's scripted. That was the whole thing. This feels a little bit too scripted. Like the mules fight back, mules on parade here. taking their Valspar championship. He is the sort of mule representative on the policy board. He's sort of had increased, well, he's always been a fixture in this podcast with our pet.
yeah, you know, Todd, I'm just so happy to be out here, Todd. It's just incredible.
And so he's always had sort of a presence on this podcast, but he's increased in the national discussion and consciousness with this policy board spot where he's sort of the mule representative. I thought it was hilarious that the Corn Ferry Tour tweeted the three-time graduate gets his second win. I was like, is that like a compliment? Or I mean, if you're a three-time graduate, it's like, I don't know. It's like a good and not a good thing. So Peppy Peter, your winner. Joel, what was your reaction as this all unfolded Sunday?
Quick aside, I'm never one to complain about broadcasts, but I was taken aback when I looked up and heard, after one of his gyrations, somebody mentioned, it might have been Faxon, someone mentioned, Peter looks a little jumpy right now, as if it's like somebody hopping on and saying, man, what's going on with Scottie Scheffler's footwork? Seems to be dancing a little bit. I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth, because one of the things I think is beautiful about the PGA Tour is that a good 4 days can be life-changing, and the tour doesn't really care who you are or what you've done. Like, once you're in the field, it's can you ball right against some of the best players in the world. Peter is kind of an avatar for this dream, right? 36 yep. year old. I think he only had two top three finishes over the past decade coming into this weekend, and now he's a guy who gets to compete in the Masters, has his card locked up for a couple of years, you know, all the goodies that come with a win. And that, man, that interview afterwards, to just see him bearing his soul. You just saw the waterworks coming and knew he couldn't stop him, but kept going.
Yeah.
It, it was one of those moments that you're like, oh yeah, that's why I invest so much time into this game or just sports in general, right? For moments like this. So that was fantastic. But like on the other side of the spectrum, as I'm watching it, I feel like, you know, the way the tour is structured, even now after some of the changes of the past 2 years, that they still ensure job security is so much of the rank and file and limiting the amount of turnover, to me at least, is one of the systematic problems of the tour product. I think moving the tour playoffs to just the top 70 was like a step in the right direction, but even giving that back door to like the next 50 in the fall, it feels like it kind of negated the what they were trying to solve. So that, like you just mentioned, Maldotti, it's been since 2015. He's been able to stick around in part thanks to that win 9 years ago. I mean, it's tough because you don't want to advocate for guys to lose their jobs or their livelihoods, but you also look at other professional sports. I mean, the guys on the fringes don't last that long, right? In football, basketball, baseball, maybe they get a couple of years and they're kind of out of the league. Maybe that's too harsh, but for golf, you know, for a sport that says that loves to make itself about meritocracy, maybe we should make the standards a little higher, because I don't know if these guys on the fringes should be able to stick around for decades just being okay, which I know is a very down way to look at this, but that was kind of my main, that was kind of the dynamic I was fighting as I watched the last couple hours of this today.
Man, you sound like Andy when Charlie Hoffman nearly won the Phoenix Open. He said he shouldn't have been in the field, shouldn't have got a chance, or what, you know, just popping him right after this moment of glory. I get what you're saying. This, though, of course, will be used as a media. You know, Robert Garrigues had sort of the quite delusional quote, I think it was on Sirius XM radio towards the end of last year, about like, I could win next weekend and that makes me relevant. And like, yeah, golf is fickle in that way. It's not like, NBA, like, or if you can't hit a curveball anymore, you just simply can't hit a curveball. Like the golf, like, yeah, you could get hot. You have the talent. You can't do it probably week over week or year over year relative to your sort of more accomplished or talented peers, but you could get hot. And like, does that mean you should have the spot? For a lot of sort of the rank and file guys and the Maldottis, this is again proof positive that the structure is appropriate, that they need not be closed out, that it doesn't need to become more cutthroat. As Rory, we're going to keep cutthroat corner going. We had another good delivered again this week with JBWDing with from the 154, and apparently no alternates. There are no alternates for this event, so JB just straight up took a spot, WD'd, and was out on his major medical. That's now gone for 5 years. So, but Maldotti winning, it's hard to argue now. It makes it harder, I should say, to argue that he shouldn't have been in the field, or people like him shouldn't be in the field, right?
And I do think, at least when it comes to these full field events versus signature, I am okay with having guys like this in. I also think it shows you why it's so valuable to keep those pathways open for the guys in the full field events to at least move on and let them prove themselves, because that's ultimately what Maldotti did, right? But yeah, I mean, I know this field was actually pretty good for the most part, but watching kind of, and Ryan Moore, same guy, right? Like Ryan's really struggled over the past couple of years, that he was in it until late. I don't know. I'm actually probably more pro Mule than most people in the media. And yet seeing some of these names today in the full field did make me wonder, should we maybe be a little bit more cutthroat and how we truncate these fields just because how many chances do these guys deserve? But to Peter's credit, he got the chance and made the most of it.
He's been like okay this year too. He's not been a mess. He did well at Pebble. He got a top 15 at Pebble, which is, you know, there's only 70 guys or whatever in the field. He top 10'd it, I believe, at Palm Beaches, whatever that is now, PGA National, and made the cut to Players. I don't think he finished very high, but he made the cut. So he was like, okay, he's been playing all right, but, you know, hadn't won in 9 years. I don't know what the analogy is to another sport. Maybe it's like silly to try to make them, because golf is so different and unique in that way, that performance on the deepest tour in the world can come. Now, was this the deepest field? No, but performance can come. And does that mean, if you have that potential to do it, does that mean you shouldn't have a spot? I don't know. It's very tricky because there's hundreds of guys
on lower tours that theoretically could do that in a 4-day span too.
It's a bit of, you can kind of see whatever you want to see in something like this, right? You can, yeah, you can look at this and go, hey, this is why we need to keep the pathways open. Or you could look at this and go, this is why we need to even get tighter with the limited fields and how many guys we should really keep on this tour. So, but no, that being said, I think this is everything you'd want of a full field event. And again, that ending and to see him just kind of fall apart, when his kids came out. I mean, that was, to me, it was one of the best moments of the year.
Oh, it was the full Peppy Peter experience. I mean, he was in full flight. You know, we were getting everything. These sort of overdramatic reactions to shots, sort of the Hideki, the fake, like, you know, head down and the ball sort of lands pin high reaction. You know, he topped the shot there in the middle of the round, but got away with it. It's like one of those tops I hit, and it's like, oh, that's great. I mean, that just took a lot of air out of play with that one. And he was just... I knew, like, you knew that the post-game interview was going to be great. Like, sometimes his mouth gets going ahead of, it always does, actually. And, you know, all of a sudden he's talking about how he doesn't know what equity is and what equity means, as he did at the Players. And he's on the, you know, policy board organizing this deal with the SSG. Like, he just goes. Apparently his post-game press conference, the non-TV one, was 4,400 words per Brentley Romine. 4,400 words, and there were only 8 questions in the press conference. He called the Travelers his major. He said he's going to be as nervous for next week's Houston Open. This is all per Brentley, as he will be on the first tee at Augusta National. No different at the Cadence Bank or whatever it is, Houston Memorial Open, kid, whatever it is now. Same thing. Never played the Masters, only played in 3 majors. Guy cleans up these sort of opposite field and fall events just to keep his card. It was the full pep. I knew his interview was going to be emotional. It was going to be good. It was going to be verbose. It was all those things. I just, not to be mean, I kept replaying it because it was great. He starts off with, you wonder if you're ever going to do it again. And I kept thinking, because you're Peter Malnati? No, because it's so hard. Like, you wonder if you're ever going to do it again, because I'm just Peter Malnati, because he is self-deprecating, yeah, in that way. But he says, because it's so hard. And I knew it was going to be good. It was a moment that delivered, for sure.
And we should also add, too, like, legitimately a wonderful guy. Like, you ask his peers, and he is up there with one of the more well-liked guys on tour. He's definitely, I don't think, a phony by any means, but... You're right. He definitely gave us the full experience, and for the indoctrinator, you definitely yeah, see why he has that following like he does.
Yeah, yeah. It will only probably amp up a little bit of the class warfare stuff, I would think. You know, and quite honestly, like, the other guys on the policy board haven't done anything this year. I mean, Tiger is sort of a not quite ceremonial golfer. Spieth is a bit lost. Cantlay, you know, is consistent, but hasn't really been in contention at all. Adam Scott is, you know, sort of a father figure now, but still can be competitive, of course. And now you got, of all the guys, Peppy Peter picking off a win. I think it will amp up a little bit of some of the class warfare. What does it mean to be a mule? Do we really want this more closed off or cutthroat than it has been? And you just keep seeing that rhetoric dialed up, right? Who was it last week that took the ball and ran with it, and Adam Schupak, Jimmy Walker had some, and
Streelman, what was right?
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
Might've been Streelman. Jimmy Walker took the ball and ran with it on 1-2. It's just been like a lot of that. I think this will only amp it up. But the Travelers is my major. It's an all time quote. First trip to a Masters for Peppy Peter.
It's funny though, cause you'll even ask some guys, and some of the mules think Peter doesn't represent them well enough. They say he sides too much with the stars. So we could even see a class divided within the mules, depending on how this goes in the next couple of days. But yeah, it's funny though. You were mentioning, like, I mean, I know Cantlay was there at Riviera, but then kind of fell apart on Sunday. I mean, you're right. I think we'll get to speak a little bit more at the Masters. But I mean, he was there at Maui, but kind of fell apart on the back nine. It has been a weird year for those guys in there. And I mean, Scott is, you know, and is now mid 40s. So he's kind of sunsetting, but yeah, very odd for those guys. You would think you had a little bit more success given who they are.
I wonder, like, I don't know. There's so much guaranteed money now. It continues to be a thing. Will there be, you know, it hasn't been a good year, a strong year on the PGA Tour, I would say. Like, let's not kid ourselves without being too negative. The Players was awesome. But, like, I don't know. I've brought this up. Like, are these guys just collecting the guaranteed money? I'm not saying they're not trying, but they're not as sharp. And the majors are kind of even more of every, like, you know, they don't need the money maybe in the way that they ever, they certainly don't need it in the way that prior generations did. And there's more guaranteed money. There's more money for finishing T10 or whatever it may be, or T25. And, like, let's go get the majors, because that's where all a lot more guaranteed money will come from too, if you are a factor there. I don't know. I don't know if it levels things out. It's certainly not good for the product, though. Let's be clear about that. Like, everybody loves the Cinderella story, but I think when you get to the Final Four, you want, like, Kentucky versus Duke. Like, would it be great if George Mason could win? Sure, that'd be like an all-timer, but, like, inevitably you get, like, a semifinal that's like kind of a clunker. But, like, I think people do want to see, like, Duke versus Carolina or Kentucky versus Carolina. Like, that, I love Cinderella as much as anyone. So the tour needs their top guys to perform, and they haven't been so far.
A few things there, right? One, I agree on the Cinderellas versus Big Dog, and in golf especially, right? Golf has shown no penchant for the little guy. It wants to see its stars succeed. So, yeah, that, I think that applies even more so to this sport. I've heard the money aspect. Is it watering down competition? I think it's a fair question to raise. I do think it's still early, and the sample size is too small. I mean, there was a lot of money in the game last year, and most of those top guys performed, right?
Right. Totally makes sense.
And but no, I think it is a valid concern. I've also, though, heard, like, what you look at other sports, that's certainly more, you know, higher contracts don't necessarily correlate to poorer performance. But I almost wonder if it's more of, are they just, is everyone just worn down by the past 2 years? Especially the stars. For the most part, the stars are the guys who've had to take it on the chin, or they've had to be the ones out front in all this. And I wonder if there were to see a little bit of wear from that, I mean, the fatigue that fans feel and onlookers feel, they're the guys. I mean, this is ultimately their profession, right? This is their livelihood. I asked Sander about that at the Players. Like, is it hard to come to work when it's dealing with all these existential questions on a weekly basis? And, you know, I thought he had a pretty good response of, yeah, like, you have to really find joy in the work or else this can get you down pretty quickly. So, I still think it's still early to make any broad assumptions from it, but it's definitely something to watch over the next, at least the next year and going forward, especially as, I mean, there's only gonna be more cash infusion with this, less.
It's a great point. I mean, like, there's just also, like, this constant anxiety too of, like, is that guy going? Is he going? Like, that's been like 2 years of that, of like, oh, what'd you hear about so-and-so, or and nobody seems to know, and you know, it changes day to day. It's like, it may not be, you know, you don't have to call it a distraction, but there's anxiety there, I think, and it's been constant, especially, and that's not affecting, you know, Peter Malnati on a day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis, and their agents and their camps and stuff like that. It's affecting the stars, or it's crossing the stars' desk more than anyone.
And you know this as well as anyone, these big events, I mean, not this qualified big event, but I'm going back to the Players last week, and we'll definitely see it, the majors going forward. I mean, these are just gossip chambers when you go to these big events where, and it seems like no one quite knows what's going on, but everyone's kind of asking what you know. And if we're hearing this, you damn know sure the Players are dealing with all this. And the simplest rumors can really snowball into something big. And I do, just for every reason, golf, because of all the dead time, there's just a lot of talk in golf. And for the most part, until 2022, right? It wasn't nothing that bad. Maybe you would have some stuff on guys' personal lives, but nothing as weighty as we've dealt with. And you're right, since the December with the Rahm defection, it was kind of nice last year. I felt like we reached a nice little part of the schedule where that talk had died. The guys who had gone to live had kind of gone. No one really jumped in year two. And then Rahm opened up the floodgates. I mean, clearly Wyndham Clark stuff has been that he's acknowledged, right? That's still very there, that he only pledged his loyalty to the end of the year. It'll be interesting to see him. I think the guy we'll talk about next who finished in second, he's been someone rumored with Liv for a long time. And if this framework deal falls apart, it'll be interesting to see, will this pick back up? And it certainly seems like, as you know, like the rumors have really started since December again, and I don't see them stopping anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about who came in second, but one thing that never comes in second for me is my B Dratty apparel. Every morning, it's just kind of a decision. Will I go casual? Will I go a little bit more dressy? Dratty has outfitted us now for pretty much 5 years. All 5 years we've done this podcast. We're going to have the Dratty House up and running here at the Masters in a couple of weeks. We can't be, you know, more excited about it. It's kind of become an annual tradition with them. Very fired up for that. They have our promo code SGS30, gets 30% off. I get their emails. I'm on their just normal customer email distribution list. Got one today for all the boxers. They've expanded their boxer line. The Dick Boxer is not alone anymore. They've got more boxers. So it's everything. It's the polo. I would recommend the Liam polo as sort of like an awesome, just that is like their tried and true item they started with. They've obviously branched out a ton. We got a lot of cool hoodie wear when we were over in Ireland, wear those a lot. We were constantly, basically when it wasn't raining, we had our zero restriction on. When it wasn't, we did the Jack polo. That was the long sleeve polo. That was kind of like everybody was wearing that all day. Every time we were out on the golf course, it's like the base layer. So this is what we wear from the boxers all the way on up. Use the promo code SGS30. That's a quality promo code, gets you 30% off at checkout. You just knock a lot off. They've become very good friends of the Fried Egg and certainly Shotgun Start. They will be with us at the Masters. So they've supported us a ton. So help us, or help support those who support us. Use the promo code SGS30 at bdratty.com. Stock up for like shoulder season items, whether it's kind of the Peruvian Pima cotton polos, whatever it is. SGS30 is the promo code there. All right. You mentioned second place, Cameron Young, solo second, survived a scare. Did Mackenzie Hughes jump into solos? No, he stayed one off. Chandler Phillips and Mackenzie Hughes were T3. Cam Young, bogeys the last. It really felt like it was opening up for him, right? Shoots a final round 68, goes 68-68 on the weekend. A ton of thoroughbreds around him, right? And this is the guy who is an elite talent. A lot of people say he should have been on the Ryder Cup. Our own Joseph Manya is still aghast that he wasn't. Has had some moments at some majors. Kind of, to my mind, really flopped at Hoylake last year when we thought he would be the guy to chase down Harmon. It's another runner-up. Is it 7 runner-ups now on the PGA Tour? And bogeys the last hole, really kind of doesn't have, you know, Melnati doesn't really have to work for it, right? Cameron Young did not make him work for it. That snake pit is hard. It's not like a birdie run, even though Keith Mitchell went bonkers there on Saturday. But he shoots he comes in 33, but bogeys the last hole when it was just him and Melnati were kind of tied on the lead there for the last hour. So what do we make of Cameron Young? He has not won on the PGA Tour, despite, you know, match play, he was right there last year, but just always kind of right there, but never across the line.
Yeah, I think let's start out with his age, right? I think he's still 26. I'd be surprised if he has 60 career starts on tour. So to finish runner-up 7 times is remarkable. And I think he's got like 10 top threes or 10 top fives and I think 15 top 10. So like all it takes is one win, and then we look at all these near misses in a different prism. And I'm a firm believer that sometimes you have to fail in these situations to figure out how to succeed. And I think this is still my default with Cam. But today was the first time I really wondered, like, all right, is there something else going on here? Because you mentioned the 18th, that drive was just a mess for something that he needed to make birdie to go that far left. And to his credit, made a remarkable approach to at least give himself a chance. But then, that birdie shot was what, like a 40 footer, and he left it 12 feet short. And obviously missed that to, you know, give Peter just a pressure free 18th. So I hate to say this, but like, I do wonder if those flirtations with Liv, which, you know, he admitted at East Lake in 2022, and it by all accounts, it was pretty close that he was going to go.
Yeah.
I do wonder the sort of effect that had on his game, because I mean, last year was a sophomore slump, right? He had the match play, he finished second, but aside from that, he didn't really do much. And while he's been better so far this year, it still hasn't reached those heights we saw two summers ago. So to me, it's something to monitor, but like there's another player who publicly, I don't think is known, that had live flirtations, but was really close. And then for a couple of reasons didn't go, and his game's really fallen off. So like Young and this other guy are two guys who I wonder if some type of flip was switched, or what happens when you think you're getting a lot of guaranteed money, and then for reasons, his choice, he decided not to go. If something that had some type of effect, granted, again, he was second today, but it's really hard to do even in a full field event. But for someone who really, I mean, he looked like the next big thing, right? Him and Zalatoris, they looked like the legit next thing, and he just hasn't lived up to that since then. It's, again, still 26, but today was kind of the first real knock on him that made me wonder, is something going on?
He's won before on the, he got really hot and won the KFT, right? Like, it's not like that was like a dominant summer he had there. I think it was 2021. But like, you got to beat Peter Malnati. I'm sorry. Like, if you want to be, this is the problem, I guess I have with some of the Delaware type, you know, talent. Like, that's a class I'll create, like Delaware meeting type talent. I think Camion's is in that, or would have been in that, close to that. Like, they're just making a shit ton of money and not winning, or not winning much of consequence right now. Like, I would throw like Cantlay and Xander sort of in that boat. Like, they've won a lot more and a lot. I'm not putting them in the same level as Cameron Young. They're above him for sure. But like, they've made a ton of money, and it's like, what necessarily have they won of consequence? And Cameron Young has to start somewhere. Like, Sam Burns won. He would win that. He's won this event. You know, he's kind of in the same category as those guys we just mentioned. But it's just you and Pepe Peter Malnati. And if you're this young stud, you have to, it's not a one-on-one game like basketball, but you kind of got to get across the line. This is a pretty bad shortcoming, in my opinion. I know the match play last year, it felt like he was going to do it at Austin, but this one for me really, really is will resonate.
It's tough too, because I think over the past couple of years, there's been this sentiment of, hey, winning is not always proof that, or you don't always need to win to show that you're a really good player. I think someone like Finau showed, like, you can be really, really good and just, it's not necessarily an indictment on you. You could just have some bad luck. Now, if you look at kind of Cam's, if you go through like the results, there weren't really any that he really kicked away. Today though, as you mentioned, like, if you look at that board, all respect to them, not a lot of Hall of Famers on that list. And if you, at some point, you do got to get it done. And again, still very, very young, but today just felt like the first time where some of these whispers we've heard about Cam, there actually might be something to him.
Yep. I think it's seven runners up. So this is another one you just throw on the pile a little bit. I don't know. He doesn't have a lot of major starts, basically two full seasons of majors and four top tens already. So like, he's the kind of talent that does well at the hardest events. He does well at a Valspar, but does well at the hardest setups too, whether it's an Open Championship, Augusta National. Like, he doesn't just do well at these sort of B-list events, but again, just win something. And that's not to suggest it's an easy thing to do. As Peter told us in his first quote, it's very hard. Anything else from the Valspar that stuck out to you? It was not a great strong week again. I imagine ratings will be down. They were down for the players. That's not to say it's, you know, dire times, but it always feels like we're just kind of waiting for the majors at this point in the year. Like, part of me, I was wondering like, oh man, I really wish we had the WGC match play this week. But I remember we always would complain about that getting buried between all the WGCs and the players and the elevated this and that. And like, why are we burying the match play ahead of the Masters? So
I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth on that either, because it just feels like this is some one of those weeks. I don't know what you change or if you change anything. You don't take weeks off. They're, you know, playing opportunities are paramount and all that stuff. It just kind of is what it is. I don't know what you change about this stretch of the schedule.
No, it's funny. I had that first thought of, man, I wish the match play was back to really help this interstitial between the players and Augusta. But at the same time, most fans are going to be watching March Madness this weekend, right? You just have to concede that's the reality. Valspar is not my favorite event, but there's not a lot that would have honestly made me turn to golf this weekend anyway, for the most part.
Go ahead.
No, the one thing I will say is, it's funny, for how well he had looked from the fall till a couple weeks ago, Justin Thomas's putting,
seven
shots, following a really tough putting performance most of this year, is something to watch, because I think this was this week Thomas had mentioned, listen, my putting, there was a couple of rounds that weren't counted that they'd be a lot better if those rounds were in it. But for a guy who a lot of us thought was back, man, you don't want your putting like this going into Augusta National. Now, I know some pros will actually say, hey, listen, Augusta, the greens are so tough, they actually kind of level out the field. But I don't, if you're someone like JT who hasn't had a ton of success at that course, having your putting be this is a mess is something that can't be great.
Yep. He shoots 79, I think it was, on Saturday. He was like in the top five or top 10, like among the last tee times, and then shoots 79, finishes T64. Not a factor, really. Although he was in ESPN Plus feature groups on Sunday with just kind of playing the supporting actor, the Alejandro Toste, in the feature groups. Like, thank you, JT. That's your biggest contribution this year, was your star power getting Toasty onto ESPN Plus featured groups. So the Toasty was a little tamer. He's on caddy number three or whatever it is. He's got, apparently, according to sources, you know, PGA Tour officials following him with a notebook, taking notes of his maybe misdeeds or outbursts. But he got Toasty on ESPN Plus. Thank you to JT for that.
I think I let you know this, but we're working on a Toasty profile, and it's something. I can't wait to. He's such an interesting guy. I think people are really gonna enjoy reading about
anything
him.
You can tease from that without spoiling it. I mean, do you follow his Instagram, like with the birds flying to him? He's never got his shirt on. Not that, like, he's, you know, he's got a dad bod, kind of. I mean, not it's great. It's enjoyable, but his Instagram is incredible.
I've just started Instagram, and so I'm barely on it. But in terms of, he is one of the guys I follow, and it's Riot. In terms of teasing, I feel bad because I haven't listened to the past couple of pods. But has the enchilada story been discussed?
Has the what?
Enchilada story been discussed?
No. You don't need to spoil it if it's in your story.
It speaks to how, put it this way, people are going to come away liking him a heck of a lot more. And I think this enchilada story speaks to who this guy really is.
Okay. All right. We can't say anything other than it's the enchilada story. All right. We'll keep our eyes open on that. I got one tale of him. He sounds insane. Just a complete warrior, like a nut job, obviously, like crazy, but in a sort of endearing way, like a people's champion kind of
thing. And I think that's what people are going to read. Like, this guy, you're going to come away really, really liking this dude. And I mean, listen, we both love this sport, but I think it could be filled with a lot of vanilla characters. This is a guy who, I mean, he is a human firework and I mean that in nothing but positive connotation. He really a sweetheart, and I think people are really going to enjoy getting to know him.
Okay, interesting. On the LPGA Tour, Nelly Korda wins the Fir Hills Sayre Park Championship at Palos Verdes, I should say. Wind just absolutely whipping, and there it's going on with the Hogue Classic too today, and the other Newport Beach, Newport area for the Champions Tour. Nelly Korda wins a playoff with Ryan O'Toole, gets back to number one in the world. I saw, I don't want to say, it might have been Justin Ray. It's like the first American woman to win multiple times on the LPGA before, you know, April, like early season kind of momentum going into the majors. Back to number one in the world. sort of had the health issues. This is good for the LPGA, which I think kind of had a ho-hum year last year. Wasn't a good, strong one for like its stars really showing out at some of the top events. So this is great for the LPGA. That sort of SoCal swing is a good one. And to get Nelly kind of taking down that first event and taking her second of the year is big as they try to build momentum for the majors. So
big time. It's from folks I've talked to in the LPGA, they're really betting hard on both Rozang and Nelly. As you mentioned, it was a rough year. There's clearly these LET negotiations that have kind of been stalled, depending on who you ask why. It sounds like Gol Saadi is trying to throw their weight around in that.
Sure.
They really need kind of Nelly to step up and be someone that attracts people. And I think so far that you're right, coming back from the health issues, her game looks fantastic thus far. It's funny, the other reaction I had watching the event was, I feel like this was the LPGA blueprint that they need to follow. Like, the PGA Tour, for various reasons, right, does not go to many good golf courses, whereas hosting an LPGA event does not require the same type of footprint that the PGA Tour demands. So if you're trying to build like a some type of base, I think bringing in courses like this week, having a strong architecture is not the worst way to go about it. And it seems something every property I've talked to that's hosted an LPGA event comes away really impressed by the experience. So I hope the LPGA starts kind of leaning into this. I know it's easier said than done, but man, if you're a golf nerd or just a golf fan, this weekend was fantastic for the LPGA.
Yeah. I thought it was good. I thought what was bullshit was them running concurrent to the Valspar broadcast with a West Coast venue. Yeah. And then the Hogue Classic getting sort of quote unquote the prime time spot. Now, I know the NCAA tournament's going on. Most sports fans are all going to be tuning into that no matter what kind of golf is on. But, like, come on. Do we need to put the Champions Tour in the 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern slot when the women are also in the Southern California area? Like, that should have been the LP. Like, so, like, it was basically, I don't know, you're either watching the PGA Tour or you're watching the women, or you're watching the tour and you flip over and you see the playoff for the women. And, that was my experience. Like, I monitored it. I've talked to Meg, you know, I was following Meg, I was following Twitter, like, and I was like flipping back and forth, but like, for by and large, I was locked into Pepe Peter. So that was, I think, like,
it can't be given, right?
The Champions Tour that platform, in my opinion.
I know, but like, it, not to defend NBC, but I can also see though, if they put them at night, put the women at night, there's that, well, why are you putting them against three NCAA championship games? No one's going to watch. Like, I feel like they're in a rough position. I do think the golf zealot would prefer at night, but it's just such a, it's almost a no win spot for them. It stinks though, because it's a very nice course with a really good field, and you wish it didn't go against this PGA Tour thing, but like, I don't know. I can see it both ways from NBC of like, whatever we do, we're going to kind of get killed for it.
Yeah. I just, like, it goes to your bit about like going to architecturally interesting courses. Like, you have to try to win at every margin, and like, mm-hmm. whether it's the Walker Cup or the Curtis Cup or whatever it is, the USAM, a college event, whatever it is, like all these things matter, and it's the PGA Tour too. I mean, the tour, even the biggest of the big boys, it matters. And I don't know, why not try to win at every margin, whether it's the best course or a time that doesn't conflict with the other high profile golf event going on. Like, I don't know, it all matters to me, but you know, in my opinion, but you know, again, everybody's probably watching the NCAA tournament. So, all right, elsewhere on the DP World, Padraig Harrington, by the way, as we're recording this, closed out that Hogue Classic down in Southern California. So congrats to Patty, just cleaning up on the senior circuit these days. On the European DP World Tour, Jesper Svensson, sort of a young Swede, beats Kiradesh in the playoff in Singapore Classic. It looked like it was a million degrees over there. It looked very hot and humid. Surprised Kiradesh made it that far, but he loses in a playoff to Jesper Svensson, the Swede. That's sort of some young hype around him. So it feels like more of the continental, or you know, Nordic, continental Europeans, non-UK or British Isles, GBNI Europeans are really continue to take over that tour.
Yeah, which is like, I think a good thing, right? It helps build that identity that they've essentially lost the past decade or so. And again, depending how this framework agreement turns out, there's a non-zero chance that that money that was supposed to go in the PGA Tour could go to the DP World Tour. And I think some of these guys who are playing well there might get a bigger spotlight. And yeah, I think the health of the DP World Tour is extremely good. It's a lot deeper than I think a lot of Americans realize. And yeah, the fact that so many good DP World Tour players are not sticking over there, but playing, they're trying to mix up a little bit. It's not just a very American-centric tour. For all the rough goes in golf the past couple of years, like DP World Tour, actually, the future seems pretty good, all things considered, and given what, the beginning of COVID, they were having real financial questions of their future. The coffee golf has been very good as of late.
I don't know if their future is good, but yeah, maybe it feels like they have a little bit more of a leverage right now. I don't know if they're definitely not the biggest dog in the junkyard or whatever cliche you want to throw out there, but like they have a potential to like sneak in to kind of, they have a potential to have an impact more than they had in the past, right?
And I think having Guy Kenning's takeover, it's gonna be really interesting. I think Pelly, by all accounts, kind of ran his course over there. It seems like people who work around Guy really believe in him, and I think he also wants to make his mark. So it'll be, I don't expect much this year, but once he kind of gets his footing in there, it'll be interesting to see what type of direction he brings the DP World Tour in.
Yep. So we mentioned the framework, mentioned sort of the movements of the tour. Anything you hear about the Yasser meetings from the Bahamas? Did he put the golden touch on Pepe Peter? He's hanging out at Tiger's house. He kind of meets Yasser and then he comes out and wins immediately at the Valspar. It feels like, you know, that was kind of just, let's all introduce ourselves, which is bonkers that that's happening now in March 20th or whatever it was. And this framework is almost a year old now, the announcement of it. And yeah, like, what have we been doing? Did you get anything substantive that you heard? There were some quotes. Kevin Streelman had a good quote, I thought, this week about, like, let's be honest, Yasser probably doesn't, they're not interested in necessarily growing the game, right? It seems like Yasser's a golf nut, but like, this is a pathway to get further into American sports. You meet the NBA owners of the SSG and the baseball owners of the SSG. It's like, it's not necessarily growing the game. He likes golf, but that's it.
It is funny. Like, now, granted, I know we've been talking about this incessantly for 2 years. And when you start talking about something at such a volume, you start looking for new takes or new ways to dissect it. But I mean, it's on the Vision 2030 website of like what they're trying to use sports for. And that's been kind of framed in a different light. Like Streelman kind of got to it. Like I this whole idea that Yasser is just a golfer and this is a passion project for him, like, yeah, to some extent, but there's real ambitions here that have nothing to do with this personal guy's taste in sports. In terms of though what happened at the meeting, the little I heard was that it was not substantive at all. They really didn't tackle any of the big issues looming over a potential deal. It really was a meet and greet, and which sounds dumb, but you have to remember a couple of guys on that board have been working pretty hard to make sure that deal doesn't happen. So just actually getting these groups in the same room, I think, is a positive step to at least a deal happening.
Which guys do you think?
Put it this way. There's one guy who's been Cantley's been painted as the guy, right? Who doesn't want it to happen. Without blending up, there's another guy who has actually worked pretty hard to not see this thing come to fruition. I think, and not Tiger. So,
do you think that the meeting has changed? Will have changed that maybe that position, or at least,
I think
just the meet and greet helps tone that down.
Yeah, I think it does a little bit, right? It goes with anything in life, right? It's very easy to dismiss the actions of someone you don't meet face to face. Once you're able to humify him, Yasser has been made to be this person that he's almost larger. Like he's discussed in these type of terms that I don't want to say deity like, but he's almost into this like legendary figure, this mythical figure. I think not putting him in the same room helps demystify that in a sense, but also I think that works to his advantage because by all accounts, he's a really charming guy in person, very disarming. I think getting Tiger on board, a guy who's also been very vocal against the possible deal, that goes a ways to helping that. I still think we're a year away from anything happening just because there are so many issues to still figure out, not least among them, what type of avenue, if any, would Liv guys have to come back. And I think the bigger struggle in that is a lot of Liv guys don't want to come back. And that's something that's going to be hard to kind of couple with some of the PGA Tours ones. This was at least a step in the right direction. But it's still one step of many. And I think even most of the guys, like Malnati had mentioned that, like, hey, this isn't going to immediately rectify something. But I do think to what Streelman spoke of, kind of understanding where Piff is coming from. And I think it actually works to Piff's advantage if the tour and the tour board looks at this as a investment and a gateway, a conduit to other businesses rather than a takeover. I think that works to Piff's advantage to getting a deal done. Now, like I said, there's still some very strong voices both on the board and in tour leadership that do not want to see a deal done. Some of those are altruistic. Some want that threat just for their own personal leverage. But yeah, it's what's the biggest struggle right now is that the board is still divided amongst itself. Don't think that's any secret. So having this meeting at least maybe helps bridge that gap a little bit. But man, if from at least what we heard at the players and the little we've heard over that meeting, there's still a real divide within the board of how to proceed and how to go forward.
God, it's crazy. I wanted to talk about Masters here, like a couple of talking points going into the Masters, because that's like what we're all just kind of waiting for at this point. But when the original framework agreement deadline was set for December 31st, 2023, and it became clear that was just like sort of an artificial deadline and we could blow through it, the world doesn't end if we don't do it. Like the extension was like, all right, we need to get it done by the players. Or it wasn't the rumor that like the Masters is sort of the new deadline, but they don't want to announce it or have it come out during the Masters because the Masters would be pissed.
We had multiple sources telling us that very thing. I think Pelly even came out and said like he expects the deal done to be by.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. And now we're past the players. Like nothing happened. There's this meeting. It just like it's not close at all. It just feels like that. That was 3 months ago where we were like, oh, we expect like, the unspoken deadline now is the Masters, except they need to announce it. They can't overshadow the Masters because Augusta will be pissed kind of thing. And that time is just come and gone. And you feel like it's still like another year, maybe. Who knows?
It's funny. Like I think what the tour has now is what they didn't have. Like you actually have guys willing to ask questions. You have, They're not yes men. Give them that. The group that comprises the board right now, they don't just go with the flow. The problem is sometimes there's playing devil's advocate and sometimes you're just being difficult for being difficult. I think that's some of the internal issues the board is facing right now, for better or for worse. And until they get that figured out, it's just hard to see anything with Piff coming to fruition by, the U.S. Open.
Yeah. And they're, there may be struggles on the Piff side too. I mean, what do they want? How do they fit in? Who, like Yasser's kind of an authoritarian, like he doesn't have to deal with the board. He makes the decision more or less, he's of course has people he has to answer to, but it doesn't have to go through all this sort of debate and policy making like it does on the PGA Tour side. It's interesting. You hear so many, we get more messages about Cantlay on both sides of it than pretty much anyone these days about him being just mad he didn't get his money from Liv, and now he's trying to like sort of he's acting that out now, or he's being unfairly maligned and actually busting his ass in this role as a policy board member. You get a lot of messages on Cantlay.
Yeah, it's almost become apocryphal. Like there's only a few people I trust with Cantlay stuff, because in a lot of it too, again, going back to our golf is gossipy, everyone has a Cantlay take and there no one's in the middle. You either really have a strong opinion about the guy one way or the other. It's funny. I personally, I do think I do think he feels a responsibility to the tour. Now, how that manifests can be interpreted a lot of different ways. I also, as he's even talked about, like, clearly his representation took a meeting with Liv. And I think a lot of people have a hard time decoupling that from his position now, right? And just by his nature, right? I think Cantlay is a guy who can come off, even his friends will say he has a demeanor about him that even if he has good intentions, they can come across really, really poorly. And this is a sport with a lot of egos. And again, golf is a game for the most part where everyone gets along. That Cantlay is a guy willing to question everything. He's very inquisitive. It can rub people the wrong way. And again, I'm not excusing some of the things he's done or said. I don't even think he's necessarily been painted in a wrong light, but it is interesting how this one guy, so much is about him. And at some point you just wonder how much of it is really real or how much are people just like to talk crap about him.
Yeah. Like there's a little bit of truth in everything from what I hear on him, like kind of from every side. So, all right. I teased the Masters. I told you like get a few things ready. What are you most looking for? Like, what are you starting to think about? I'm sure you're working on some stories for the Masters. You had your big one last year on Augusta National. What are you kind of as Masters is what? Two plus weeks away before we get there. What are you kind
of starting to 2 weekends away?
Yeah, Anwa is 2 weekends away. What are you starting to think about for the Masters?
So I've kind of gotten a more player centric approach this year. Yeah. And the three guys that have really, really intrigued me going in are, and the great thing about the Masters is it's the one major where like the storylines can kind of hold because obviously it's a 80 person field and there's only 30 guys or so really competing for it or have a viable chance once you take out the past champs and amateurs and first timers and guys who are just kind of happy to be there. So in that sense,
where does Pepe Peter fall into that? First timer, happy to be there, all of the above.
Do you think he plays the yellow ball at Augusta National?
I think he does. He had a charming quote about that, I thought.
I know.
Did you see that? He said his kid liked it. His kid's grown out of it, but now he sees it, and it like makes him smile a couple times around because he thinks of his kid. I mean, it's sappy. It's Cam Young had an amazing quote, too. All this dad life stuff. Did you see his quote? Like, how he's trying to harness your emotions. What are your emotions like right now? He says, I don't know. I realized I wasn't going to win pretty quickly, and I have a 4-hour drive home with 1- and 2-year-olds. So whatever emotions are attached to that. Amazing. Yellow ball quote, and then about your emotions driving 4 hours with the 1- and 2-year-old. Not fun. You think he plays the yellow ball at Augusta? I think he does.
I think he does. I could also see like an Azalea-themed golf ball.
Oh, no. An activation? You think so? He's going to have the bucket hat. He'll have that. A bucket hat, a yellow ball. I mean, he's the – and just too much exuberance. If he's the guy on, like, the first tee at a Muni at, like, 8 a.m., you're like, I need to find somewhere else. This bucket hat, yellow ball, and too much chatter. I need to find a new parent. But he seems like a great guy. I don't think he'll – I think he'll stay true to himself, play the yellow ball at the Masters.
I mean, there's a good chance those who go could see him in like the merchandise center. I could see him like downing pimento cheese sandwiches down the fairway. I'm very open to the Peter Malnati Masters experience.
I can't believe he's never played. I guess it makes sense, but like, you've been a pro for like a decade plus and on tour. It's kind of wild.
It's so hard to get in. It really is. Of all the majors, like if you don't win, it really is hard to get there. Unless you're, you know, T2 and or T3 and a couple times a year. It's funny for all these. It's tough because of all the talk of meritocracy. Like you kind of look at the Masters and like, all right, there's a lot of amateurs. There's a lot of guys who are in their 50s playing, but like the guys who are actually there really all have earned it and deserved it. And that to me, it's one of the reasons why this tournament means so much. It's like, it's the one event the players are happy to be there as we are. Right. What was I about to say? Oh, the player. All right. So the three players I had kind of circled, the first one is Brooks, and I just don't know when we're going to learn that like a healthy Brooks is pretty much a lock to contend. Like I'm not like a gambler, but I saw he was at like 23-1 going into the weekend, which is absurd for a guy who finished T2 last year. Hey, look, for Brooks, if he wins the Masters, there's only, I think, 10 guys since World War II have won 6 majors, and he has a chance to join that list with the Masters winner, you know, I guess his next major win. And it's, I guess to me, it's sort of funny that Brooks' narrative was that he never got enough respect. And then of all the big names who left the tour, we probably spent the least amount of time discussing what like Brooks' departure meant. And you see this list and this list you can join. Like we may be failing to appreciate one of the all-time greats right before our eyes. So there's that, but in this, that same breath, I mean, he's 33. So like theoretically, he's not at the end, but I also don't know how much longer he has because that athleticism, that physique, I mean, it really belies all the mileage he has racked up on that body. And let's be honest, golf is not really kind to those who have an injury use as they age. So while I'm not saying this is it, I just also don't know the type of runway he has. I mean, heck, he even said it at last year's Masters, right? If his body felt as good as it did, he doesn't know if he would have jumped to live. So even though he feels good now, it's no promise of the future. And that's why, I mean, is this not the last chance, but does Brooks only have a couple more chances at this? At an event he's played really well at. So he's kind of the first guy I have circled.
Yep. Also preoccupied with building Team Smash, too. You just don't know how much that distracts you. Who's the other guy you got circled?
Second was Spieth. And listen, I know, you know, we made so much about Spieth a couple years ago and when he kind of came back from the wilderness because, you know, that he got lost and then he was found. It was this great story. But we really haven't like discussed what he's been since he's been back, which is he's in this like kind of odd purgatory where he's a good player, but he's treated like he's great. Now, I know a lot of that is because just, you know, athletes, once they achieve a certain achievement, you know, once they've achieved greatness, there's just this gravitational pull that you know, it stays long after the greatness is in question. And there's also that part where Jordan is just a magnetic personality, right? Both who he is as a person and his playing style. And to me, like in a weird way, Jordan's almost a variation of Tiger and that fans are still holding on to a past that might not come back. Now, having all said that, no player currently plays as well at Augusta like Spieth. And he's also one of the era's finest links players, which always makes him a threat at the Open. So I don't think a Masters win propels him like to a rejuvenation of what we saw 4 or 5 years ago, but I can also see him winning at Augusta and then contending at Troon. And then all we're talking is Jordan Spieth back. So he's just something we always watch, but just because of the past couple of years and the fact that he's been just this good, but not great guy, I feel, again, only 30 years old, so still a lot of time, but also time is starting to run out to be the player we, you know, to be this great player, to be on that trajectory, that all-time trajectory we thought he might be. Even though those heights probably won't be reached again, the fact that he plays his best golf at 2 of the 4 major venues is just mind-boggling. So, he's coming another guy. I'm really interested to see how he reacts in a couple weeks.
16 career wins, only 2 of them in the last 7 years. So it's kind of a big feast there, as we know. Those first four or five years. So, who else? What else you got ahead of the Masters?
Well, the final guy I'm looking at is Rahm, and some of that actually started this past week when he did a winner's press conference with some media. And I feel bad because I think he actually kind of got portrayed in a bad light. There were a few quotes that made him seem like he feels sad watching PGA Tour and that he can't compete anymore, and you know how it's harder than he thought. I think from just listening to him, I think what he was trying to convey is like, yeah, it's harder than I thought or harder than people may think. Just because I have hundreds of millions of dollars doesn't make it easy. But he didn't say he regretted his decision. I think a few times he even stated he's enjoyed the live experience. But I just thought some of the reactions were kind of the pool quotes that lack context. This wasn't a guy failing to take consequences for his actions. So I get why some fans want to clown on him, but and especially for all the things he said over the past 2 years and do the opposite, he's an easy target. But I thought it was actually admirable for Rahm to admit that, hey, the money doesn't assuage this pain he feels of missing events. But that kind of brings me to why I'm interested in him, because one of the takeaways last year for me when I think about last year's Masters is, you know, Rahm was I felt like he was always really liked by fans, but never beloved. And then, especially in that marathon Sunday, watching the rapport between him and the crowd kind of turn into something more was really endearing. And it just felt like he was finally like this really beloved guy for his talent. We weren't thinking about, you know, who he was or what he might do, or knowing him for his, you know, temper at times. It was just a real appreciation for what he has done. Now, kind of coming back as a live guy, I mean, he's not going to get booed, right? That's not the receptions, I guess, the national gives. But I mean, if you remember last year, though, Koepka and even Phil on Sunday, they weren't warm welcomes either. It was sort of icy. Like if you kind of look at Phil, the way Phil's been treated since everything happened, like you had the U.S. Open where you would have no idea that things have changed. It's still the same thing. Then you go to the Open, and the crowds over in the UK are definitely icy towards live guys. They definitely have a different take on the divide. Augusta's kind of in between that, and I think that's just going to be really interesting for the reigning Masters champ, how he's received, how he reacts to that, because it does seem from a few people I've talked to who know Ron pretty well, he was a little taken aback by the reception to his jump. I guess he thought after the framework agreement, it wouldn't be the same type of stigma that it is. So for a guy I think it's just going to be really interesting to see how he reacts to maybe going that feeling he had that Sunday at Augusta to now being this kind of thing no one wants to talk about. It'll be really interesting to see how that affects his performances, if at all.
Yeah, interesting. I do think the framework agreement has intervened since our last Masters and provided this sort of cover of, I don't know, it's not a black and white, these guys are good or bad. I don't know. It's just, we'll see. Who knows how the crowd reacts. I think the Masters tends to keep things pretty between the rails, you know, no matter what. So
yeah, without a doubt. And you know, it's no, I mean, the tournament has no appetite for controversy, and just the patrons are just so respectful. But I do just keep going back to that 17-18 hole when Phil is making a charge, and you would think it would be this outpouring of love for a guy in his 50s damn near winning the Masters at his age, and instead it was almost like fans didn't know how to react. It was like they were, I mean, they clapped, but like it wasn't anywhere close to what Phil, I mean, not even Phil, but just to what a past champion would receive in general. Then add on the love that galleries have had with Phil. It was just like this very weird, people didn't know how to react. And I agree, the framework agreement and everything that's happened since might have changed that. But more than any other fan base, like the Masters patrons, like they know their stuff, and it's kind of an old school conservative crowd who definitely do not look at the live thing as a positive thing. So, yeah, it's just something I want to kind of keep an eye on, because I don't know 100% sure, but I think that's what makes it kind of intriguing.
Well, maybe they'll come around when Akon performs at the Miami event the week prior to the Masters. Maybe he might win that old school conservative crowd over. Little Akon goes a long way. Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait. I had some things like the Cam Young stuff today. I can't wait because of majors. You get some interesting questions in the press center. I remember somebody at the Masters, Cam Young, obviously was the guy asked about growing up in the Bronx at the Open 2 years ago. Somebody at the Masters like had some horrendously awkward questions for Morikawa last year. Just like amazing stuff. I'm excited to get that going again. My own little amusements. And quite honestly, I'm excited to get to an event where like kind of the golf supersedes everything once the golf starts. And I'm not sure there are many events like that anymore. There are the majors. I think the Players got there, and there just aren't. Everything else is like, what does this mean vis-a-vis the larger discussions we're having about board seats and mergers and whatever else? And I don't know. Just I love just being able to get into a golf tournament for 4 days. So.
Quick aside on the Cam from the Bronx. I think you were with us that night when I was retelling this, but if not, it's too good not to share. So the guy who asked Cam that question at the Sanders Open was sitting right in front of me, and a couple writers came over after it happened, and we're like, what the hell was that? And I felt bad. I'm trying to like let people know the guy's right there.
Yeah.
And after like 90 seconds, the guy just turns around and kind of berates us like, oh, like, you know, me and Cam go back. I knew it was a joke. It was all fine. And there was that like feeling of, oh man, did we just make fun of this poor guy and did a joke come off wrong? However, the writer in question was from a non-golf outlet, and when he left, on his computer was Cam Young's Wikipedia page that had Bronx highlighted. So like clearly the guy had just looked on Wikipedia, saw Bronx, and that was the impetus for the question. So anyway, little background on the infamous
Good. All right. I think that does it for this Monday. Victory Monday. Illinois wins dominant fashion for Andy. So in Victory Monday here, anytime Pepe Peter gets on the board and keeps that character alive, we're happy about that. Joel, you can read his work on Golf Digest. You can follow him on Twitter. What's your handle? Is it just Joel Beal, or do you have your middle initial in there?
What is it? Joel M. Beal.
Joel M. Beal. Read him on Golf Digest. I'm sure you got some Augusta National. It sounds like you got a toasty tale in the works with the enchilada story. I need to know more about that. Follow him on Twitter, subscribe, follow his work at golfdigest.com. Senior writer Joel Beal, thank you for joining us on this Monday.
Thanks, Brendan. Appreciate the invite.